This is a Smoke Radio podcast.
Ever living God, we remember those whom you have gathered from the storm of war into the peace of your presence. May that same spirit calm our fears, bring justice to all peoples, and establish harmony among the nations. Amen.
During the Great War, people from all walks of life joined the war effort. Even students from our university, at the time a polytechnic, made the ultimate sacrifice at home and abroad. This is their story. On the 4th of August, 1914, Germany marched its army through Belgium to attack France. Britain goes to Belgium's aid and declares war on Germany.
My name is Claire Brennan and I'm the cataloguing archivist here at the university. The history dates back to 1838 when the Polytechnic was originally called the Polytechnic Institution. And at that time, it was a place where members of the public could come in and see scientific experiments being done, such as they could see a giant induction coil, they could use a diving bell and go underwater for the first time and breathe underwater.
Early August 1914, Polytechnic members are asked to enlist and the Rangers Company is mobilised.
The Polytechnic already had a territorial force regiment, so the territorial force was like the territorial army, so the precursor to that. They had weekly drills and rifle practice in the rifle range at Regent Street, and they had an annual summer camp. So in fact, in August 1914, when war broke out, the Rangers were on their way to their annual summer camp. So they were immediately recalled and mobilised and sent off to fight in France and Belgium.
On the 7th of August 1914, the first members of the British Expeditionary Force land in France.
By October 1914, 900 polyboys had enlisted, 600 of which, roughly, were in the Rangers and others had joined various different regiments around the country. And the first poly member who was killed in the war actually was fighting for France, and he died in September 1914, I think.
On the 2nd of September 1914, Lieutenant Colonel Ian Hogg, son of Quintin Hogg, dies fighting in northern France.
There were a lot of letters, and they all seem to be sort of very upbeat. Not all of them, but a lot of them seem to be very upbeat. And you know, it's hard to tell whether they were putting on a brave face for those back at home so that they weren't really worrying about their relations fighting, or whether they just didn't want them to have to worry about the horrors of what they were seeing, or whether, you know, these men were actually surprisingly upbeat. It's hard to tell, and you can read into it what you will.
C. Simpson, who has joined the Queen Victoria Rifles, writes that they have very comfortable sleeping quarters at Crowborough, with good food. The only trouble is mud. But in spite of that, they stick to the work cheerfully. He says, "I cannot go outside without someone saying, 'Hello, Simpson, surely you know me from the poly.' Really, I cannot remember ever having seen them before. At once we give each other the poly grip, and we are firm friends. So that, after all, the world is not so large."
From the 14th to 15th of February, Captain Lionel Studd, son of J.E.K. Studd, and Major Vincent Hoare, son-in-law of Quintin Hogg, are killed fighting in Belgium.
On Friday afternoon, we were called out, and we were soon in the thick of it. I did 51 hours right off the reel, and have been at it constantly until yesterday. Of the sights I've seen, I must write in a future letter, otherwise I should cover as many pages again. How we went almost into the German lines, of the escapes our fellows had, and the work the motor ambulances in general have done. All this must wait. The thousands of wounded, the mangled bodies, ruined houses, the crowds of refugees leaving towns which have not previously been shelled. The early stages of the war all over again. It is horrible, and I have seen enough, but I am glad to be here doing my bit and hope to carry on.
In March 1915, the British government asks women to sign up for war work, and over 1,600 polytechnic men are on active service.
I think the senior management wanted to get back to normal, but with so many men having gone off to fight, and 394 men from the Polytechnic were killed during the war, so a lot of the sports and social clubs were had depleted numbers, and they were trying, I think the Polytechnic actively were trying to encourage and recruit younger members to come and take both the educational classes and join the clubs and societies. And the Polytechnic took a very active role in rehabilitation and retraining these disabled servicemen. And Robert Mitchell, who was the Director of Education at the Polytechnic, was actually employed by the government to set up rehabilitation centres.
11th of November 1918, Armistice Day. Peace is agreed. The Poly holds a service of thanksgiving.
In the foyer of 309 Regent Street, there is a war memorial to World War I, which was unveiled in about December 1920. There's also one for World War II as well. There is the Quinton Hogg statue just by the BBC in Langham Place that actually has one side of that is a war memorial for both the First and Second World War. And there's a third war memorial to the Rangers, the regiment of the Territorial Force that the Polytechnic members were part of, which is just off Tottenham Court Road. So that's a specific memorial. And then this year, together with the Woodland Trust, the university are planting 394 trees down at Chiswick to commemorate those that died in the First World War as well.
Corporal Ditchman writes, "It is very cold here. They have had nearly a fortnight's frost. The first day or two I was too cold to do anything and had to run around the huts to keep warm. But I have now got more acclimatised. The men here were wearing shirts and coats, no vests. So they must be pretty hard. You have only to mention Polly, and it is, do you know so-and-so?" When you go home, tell them of us and say, "For your tomorrow, we gave our today."
This is a Smoke Radio podcast.